Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have with me Brent Baum, who is the author of Surviving Trauma, School Earth, A Practical Guide to Emotional Survival on the Earth Plane. Brent is a Near Eastern archaeologist, a Catholic priest, an addictions counselor, and a clinical hypnotherapist. He's developed holographic memory resolution, and this technique has helped many people who have sustained significant traumas get over these traumatic experiences and basically do an emotional reframing of the trauma so that they can proceed with their life rather than simply reliving the trauma. We're very glad to have Brent with us, and he's going to be hosting Noetic Science the third Thursday of June. So if you're near Atlanta listening to this show, you can come meet him at Noetic Science about 7:30 on the third Thursday. Welcome, Brent. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Dr. Kolb. Great to be with you.
And you're also going to be doing a workshop in Atlanta, is that right?
I am. I train therapists, social workers, marriage and family therapists in trauma resolution techniques, and we're doing a training on the 13th through the 15th in Atlanta. And then I also have a workshop, a three-day workshop that's available to the general public just to do your own healing work. That's a healing intensive. That's a three-day process where we really focus on specific memories and issues and kind of do a little group dynamic to help people feel safe and release the impact of stress and trauma in their daily lives. And that's open to anyone that's interested in attending. So it's also a requirement for my trainers, so they get to see me do the technique 50 to 100 times and get to experience the technique as well.
And where in Atlanta are you going to be holding this?
That's at the Shiloah Healing Center. And that location is on Powers Ferry Road, I believe it's called, and
okay.
The address is on my website.
Okay.
Also.
Well, that's probably out near 285 West, so
right.
That's probably pretty
right.
Easy to get to. Well, great. Well, tell us a little bit about your personal history. I know that you were a Catholic priest, which is you talk a little bit in your book about your journey.
Right.
How did your journey get you to the point of being a expert in trauma resolution? That's an interesting job.
It is. Well, you know, part of it was, I think as a child, I thought that, you know, in a little town in Louisiana, that the way you heal is you do it with religion and you do it with forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that as I progressed through ministry, a lot of people were returning to repeat the same patterns. There was a lot of addiction, alcoholism, eating disorders. And
mm-hmm.
in my new book, and actually all three books, but especially in the new one, I talk about the four willpowers versus just the moral failure model that we used up until the 50s. And I was
mm-hmm.
always fascinated with addictions, though I'm not chemically dependent myself. We, in my family, we often had an attraction to addictive personalities and so on. The first pastor I was stationed with was a practicing alcoholic. The bishop died of cirrhosis of the liver. So my religious
mm-hmm,
system
mm-hmm.
also gave me exposure to addictions. And I was a little frustrated because the model, just trying to do the forgiveness model with alcoholism, or as we've now learned in public with sexual addiction, things like that, that forgiveness model doesn't heal the trauma behind the compulsive behaviors. And
mm-hmm.
so I began to focus on techniques that would be more effective and ended up developing some techniques, emotional reframing techniques, so we could talk not just to the 5% moral conscious mind, but we could also speak to the 95% subconscious that stores all the traumatic imprints and is often, you know, a lot of shame is often in place before the age of 3, 4, 5 years old, especially with abuse issues. And so if we don't resolve those issues, we're kind of destined to manifest that in some type of a medicating experience or compulsive behavior. And so I became an addictions counselor and developed my work in order to address that huge portion of the population that really couldn't just do the moral failure model, do the moral forgiveness model, and release the trauma imprint. And
mm-hmm.
that led me both personally for my own interest and as well through working with treatment centers and so on to find techniques that were more effective, because a lot of times they had you talk about it and do a little rational therapy and discuss it, but the techniques that I found that were most effective were the ones that spoke to the subconscious, and that's where probably around 90 I came across the work of David Grove, a psychologist from New Zealand, who discovered that we always freeze perception at the millisecond before we're overwhelmed and store all of that emotional and brainwave data in the subconscious in order to survive. And if we don't talk to that part of the subconscious, then we're kind of destined to keep triggering it and reliving it indefinitely until it's released.
And yeah, so that's where flashbacks come from.
Exactly.
You flash back to the point right. Yeah, that's exactly right. Because flashbacks are totally you really can't control them. I mean, there's no conscious control of flashbacks.
Exactly. That's that 95% going active. And now that we know memories are stored in like a hologram-like manner, a smell, a sound, a feeling, a sensation, an image on television, anything similar to what we've stored, and we're capable of activating that what they call T-1, trauma minus a millisecond moment, that vivid instant. And we know now from SPECT scanners, single photon emission computed tomography scanners, that we go right back into the same brainwave pattern and the same physiology if the memory hasn't been resolved. So we really do, you know, we stress our adrenals, we end up weakening our immune systems every time we go into flashbacks. And the scientists are estimating we go in and out of trance or memory 15 to 50 times an hour now.
Well, let's talk a little bit for a minute, because I don't think the listeners really appreciate, why did we develop this system? What survival benefit did it give us?
Well, you know, we all know about fight, flight, freeze, and that hits us with our strongest hormone when we're overwhelmed. And so you can lift the car off your child, do amazing things at a crisis moment, and that's helped us. But we know now that whenever you trigger a negative memory and adrenaline goes up, your T cell, your thymus cell production, and your immunity go down. Now, that's automatic because you can't keep producing adrenaline in crisis and still expect your immune system to not pay a price. But even before the adrenaline hits, we've discovered that your mind actually, it's kind of like on the old VCRs when you hit stop, got your popcorn, came back, hit play, it backed up a couple of frames. Well, you and I are designed under not just trauma, but stress, small T trauma, as I call it, big T trauma. We back up a millisecond, we take a picture, we consolidate all the data, and we store it. Somatic psychology is the term we're using nowadays, but body-centered psychology says you have 1,000 neurons per square inch, so you can take that entire traumatic experience and reduce it to a lump in your throat, a knot in your stomach, a vice in your head, the burning on your face where you got hit or slapped. Anywhere where we feel overwhelmed, we can store that icon of tension just like we do on the computer when we're storing a program. And that icon, anything similar, if memories as we now suspect are all holographic, three-dimensional, then any fragment, a smell, a sound, feeling, and you're back there again. So the body has the reversibility, and in my books I talk about that from my archaeology background and anthropology. We survived on this planet because we do so easily. We store in trance. We self-hypnotize, as we call it, easily, because all stress and trauma creates kind of a little self-hypnotic state to contain the pain and protect us. And because it's stored site-specifically, you may remember the event and the feelings, just kind of repress it into your stomach, or you may remember the event but have no idea about the feelings, or, as we know, in extreme circumstances, the entire traumatic event can be reduced to an icon in your body, but you go into traumatic amnesia automatically to protect. You can't believe your daddy or your minister is doing this to you. And so the whole thing goes completely subconscious, and you don't remember that it even happened. But, of course,
that's,
as you know,
that's
from
fascinating. That is just fascinating.
From your work,
that
your work and my work, we know that the body always remembers, which is what you and I focus on in our healing work.
Right. And, well, the term cellular memory has been used in the past. How do you think the cellular memory or the idea of the cellular memory works? Do you think it actually starts to degrade tissue?
Well, actually, that's a very good question, because I think nowadays we'd probably revise the concept and say that trauma is stored in both the cells and the meridians of the body, the energy fields or energy lines of the body.
Yeah.
Because even, you know, if we even lose the limb or the organ through surgery, if the memory comes up of when we're five being abused, and I have documented cases in my first book, published in the American Journal of Kidney Medicine, where when the memory came up in the body of the five-year-old, the kidney and the pain started hurting again, even though the nerves had been severed at Johns Hopkins in an effort to stop the pain. So we know from Vietnam, from Afghanistan, Iraq, even if the arm or limb is removed, if the pain remains, what we're doing is we're talking to the body and maybe the cellular memory, but forgetting that we're, you know, if mind rules body, we also have to talk to the mind, and that is where acupuncture, acupressure, all the energy psychology techniques, which, by the way, energy psychology is now approved by the American Psychological Association for continuing education. So we know now that we have to pay attention to the weight and the pain in the emotional body or the meridians, because if you only treat the physical body, but even if the arm or limb is gone, you'll still have pain if the memory is intact. And so we have to use a language. That's where I developed my work, to speak to both the cells and the meridians of the body. And the first language that you and I develop as a child to do that is color. So what I do is teach clients to put in the missing signal, often using visualization or color, to address the original moment of encoding and say, look, if I can move this safety signal through the body, the bad thing is over and we can release it. And color is a primary language, is an infinite language which speaks to both the cells and the meridians of the body. So it's very eloquent. It works very, very well.
I'm sure you've treated women who've had sexual abuse issues and developed chronic pelvic pain.
Yes.
When you speak to them about this technique, what do they tell you in general? I mean, the color
technique. Well, we know, of course, that when you leave a trauma in your body, in the meridian cells and meridians, your cells replicate every seven-year cycle. So whatever's in the body then tends to manifest in some form of distortion. And I've seen everything from, and doctors now know to ask if there's chronic urinary tract infections, pelvic inflammatory conditions, if they're different kinds. Often they get an IBS, irritable bowel syndrome diagnosis, without knowing quite why the pain is there. Sometimes it's in a chronic pain on one side or the other. But we now know to really do a careful check in the trauma history and determine if there's any kind of covert or overt abuse in the person's history. Because within a seven-year cycle, that will start to manifest. One of the leading breast cancer specialists in L.A. will ask, have you had a trauma from a male in the last 7 years? What's changed in your last seven-year cycle in your history or metabolism that might precipitate a cell mutation, cause a cyst or a fibroid or even a tumor? And oftentimes they can identify a series of changes or traumatic events that are affecting the body and the physiology.
Yeah, I do a lot of work with breast cancer and premalignant disease of breasts as well.
Right.
And since I remove damaged breast implants, we're always doing biopsies and, you know, just taking a look at the fibrocystic disease to see what's going on. And I can tell you that when people have multifocal premalignant disease, especially in the left breast, and they're right-handed, they almost always have sexual abuse issues from a figure that was supposed to protect them and didn't, you know.
Right,
so,
right.
Often abuse. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, what's fascinating, I'd love to chat with you in more detail sometime about this, but the left breast, I discovered about 5 years ago, and part of my work is traditional, part of it is contemporary science, and part of it is a little ahead of the game. Dr. Andrew Weil used her for his medical residents to watch me work when I was developing this, because part of how I developed it was my mother was just a very gifted empathic person. She could feel trauma as a physical sensation. When we were hurt, she'd feel it in her body.
Right.
And I discovered in 1992 that when clients went into memory, there were times when I could feel actually a pain coming from their body in my own hands. And I used that to kind of refine the technique and to discover, you know, that when we go into that kind of trance or pain, we recreate these kind of pain states in the body. And I used that to kind of refine the technique and develop this, but discovered two meridians on the left side of the chest over the heart that store our relationship history. And there are times when my clients point to what we think are those meridians, and when they tap, this is where, you know, where I feel my dad died, or it broke my heart, or I had a relationship breakup, or I was abused. the point that they touch sometimes correlates to places where they've had cysts, tumors, breast cancer originally showed up. So we're going to have to prove and demonstrate that there is a correlation over the next decade or two. But I have no doubt that the mind definitely shapes the body profoundly. You know, and that you're quite right about that. Whether it's a, you know, a breast implant that's defective, that leaked and caused a, you know, biochemical toxin in the body, or whether we're talking about a traumatic event, it's interesting that the meridians are on the left side of the chest area, and the breast, which often gets the cancer, is in fact on the left usually.
Yeah, the and then the other part of that is if they've had someone that they nurture, a child, an elderly parent, or even a husband who's somehow impaired, and something happens with that relationship, either the person dies or almost dies or even rejects them, the breast cancer will be on the right side. So there's an equivalent right thing.
Exactly.
The left side being somebody that is supposed to nurture them or protect them, and then the other way on the other. It can be reversed depending on brain chemistry.
Right,
and
exactly.
If they're left-handed.
Right, right, exactly.
You know, depending on which brain is dominant, I think.
I found that exactly to be the case. You are correct there, too. Yeah, I've seen that as well. And, yeah, so where in the body it occurs, and there's not a part of the body that doesn't store neurons. So nowadays, somatic psychology is teaching us you could store the trauma almost anywhere in the system. We have unlimited storage capacity, and it's what I do is teach people really a series of questions to focus on the body, see if the pain has kind of a three-dimensional metaphorical form, and then to click that site and see if there's a memory or series of memories that surfaces, because we're now gaining the ability. There's an emergent field called symbolic disease, where symbolic illness, where we're learning to map the etiology, the beginnings of a disease in the memory history, and ask the body, can you please show us why this pain is here? And it actually, I developed a software program when I work with my clients at Miraval or in my private practice that I actually, and it's available to my certified therapists as well, where they can record the memory sequences and see what the patterns are of repression of the immune system that might have contributed to the emergence of a particular autoimmune disorder or illness. And so we're very excited that we're actually gaining that ability to demonstrate and let the body of the client teach us why they got sick, why they got ill. And I see it most commonly with things like migraines, where it's a series of 3 to 5 memories based on the first migraine being very traumatic. And often if you reframe the first migraine, the pain diminishes. And if you follow through 3 to 5 additional migraines, often the pain is gone and frequently does not return.
And is there a particular type of trauma that is associated with the migraines?
Not necessarily. I mean, you find it a lot in the teenagers where they're mentally, intellectually trying to resolve what is emotionally imprinted. So the mind, the brain, the intellect is really struggling to grasp, to make sense of, to find a rational solution to domestic violence, to fighting, quarreling, to stress. Sometimes they're very peer pressure sensitive in high school. I work with a lot of teenagers with migraines. Some of them I find are just very, very gifted, very energy sensitive, emotionally sensitive. Sometimes it reflects a little boundary problem in the family. If they're children of alcoholics or not fully supported by parents, they're more vulnerable. So it really depends on how they store stress in their bodies, but the attempt to try to resolve it mentally or intellectually often gets into kind of a conundrum, and they can't, you know, get out of the spiral, and then they move into migraines, including everything from, you know, the auras around and nausea and being immobilized for 2 or 3 days sometimes. But if we can catch it early and teach them relaxation techniques and to identify the stressors, and we always reframe the first migraine, we basically revisualize that not happening and send a safety signal through the body. And often when we do that, it stops or diminishes the sequence. So the process that I do is, I refer to it as an emotional reframing technique. It was actually based on how little children resolve trauma. If you have a child draw a picture of like physical or sexual abuse, they'll almost always go to black and red, their first language of color for emotion. And they'll draw it in red and black. And if you have them, now red and black can be positive colors, imperial colors of China and Japan, red, black, you know, calm, elegant, absolute. But if they draw it for trauma, no light, no safety, black, minimal, anger, violence, red, and most of us already know this intuitively on a gut level. If you have the child redraw in art therapy the picture the way it should have been with safety and nurturing protection, they'll go to their bright nurturing colors from their history and culture. Then if you have them move a color or feeling from the safe scene, kind of like an icon from the positive hologram, the corrected image, through the part of the body holding the original icon of tension, that knot in the stomach or the weight on the chest, when in physics you take red and black and you add all the missing colors that should have been there, put them back together at the same site, what you get is white light. So what I tell my clients is, we're not here to change your history. We're here to have you transmit a signal using your own internal color frequencies to show your body that by moving the safety picture or feeling through your body, you're not still in the original history. You're not in the trauma scene. And when we do that and move that through the body, because my mother was an empath and I inherited her empathy, the minute the client moves that through, I feel the pain waves discharging through the front and back of the body. There's a point near C7 on the spine, which has about five functions. In neuroscience, it's the mother-child bonding site. In Chinese acupuncture, it's the hammer point. It opens to the dorsal channel of the spine. It's where a mother puts her hand to support a child's neck and spine as they're growing up. So when people reframe their memories and move the safety colors or feelings through the body, often there's a discharge of pain through that C7 point and through the front of the body. And with the empathy my mother passed on to me, you know, I'm able to feel pain waves when they're leaving and to know when it stopped. At that point, then I ask the client, how do you feel now? Any pain or tension left? They're like, no, it just finished leaving about a minute ago. Are the neck pain or the migraines gone? Are the back pain? A lot of whiplash from car accidents stays in the body from the memory. So it really, what I tell people is, I'm teaching you how to send a signal to prove to your own body that you're not still in your history. You're not still trapped in that scene. And color as an infinite language is very sophisticated. So your colors that you picture for your memories are not my colors. So what I tell people is, I don't really do the technique. I'm teaching you how to heal yourself and to transmit your own proof of safety. And when we do it with vets, you know, a lot of times the flashbacks, the chronic pain stops. Same thing with the sexual abuse survivor, a lot of migraines, a lot of whiplash. You work a lot with women. A lot of PMS turned out to be a traumatic first period if they didn't have adequate information or it caught them off guard. They get very frightened. They're very anxious. Both of my sisters confessed that they thought they were dying of cancer when they had their first menstrual cycles. So lack of information will certainly cause that nerve plexus of your body to tense up. So I would bet that a significant percentage of PMS isn't PMS, that it actually is post-traumatic stress from not being prepared for what is a healthy biological process.
Yeah, that's probably true.
So the kind of emotional, there are two kinds of icons that we store routinely. Level one being a single moment of trauma, because a lot of people are saying, well, that's not the kind of trauma I had. I don't remember being physically or sexually abused. But there's also level two trauma, which I discovered after about 7 years of my work, and that's a repeated pattern of exposure to multiple instances. Growing up with an alcoholic father, emotionally unavailable parent, perfectionistic mother, second grade teacher didn't like you, first relationship is abusive, often I call the first marriage a shadow marriage where your trauma history attracts the other person's trauma history, and you have the chance to work that out in order to either move into a healthy relationship or to move on. So having a chronic pain condition, an addiction, having a physical, mental, emotional pain condition, having a parent, a sibling, a spouse, or a child with such a condition is often level two trauma to you, which accumulates over the time. And the good news is, whether it's a single moment or an accumulation, the body still stores it like the icon on a computer. So every experience, be it a single event or an accumulation, is stored somewhere in the body, in the hard drive of the body and the neurons and cells of the body. So, and that's when over time, you know, over several seven-year cycles, then it becomes illness to get our attention and say, hello, you haven't paid attention to me. You haven't been, you know, reframing your memories or healing your past, and here it is. Here it is again. So that's kind of how I developed the process and have been working with people. I did Oklahoma City bombing, and then I did Flight 800 when it went down in New York, worked with 5,000, well, not all 5,000, but I presented it to TWA, and they called in a panic saying, we have a lot of traumatized employees, what can you do for us? And at that time, I was working at Cottonwood Treatment Center, so we worked, I was the trauma program at Cottonwood, so I worked with them. And then by September the 11th, I was invited to go to Miraval and became part of Dr. Weil's integrated wellness program there at Miraval also. And so, there, you know, we always have some type of trauma going on around us. And the nowadays, with media being so reality-oriented and visual, the only person that's really going to protect us and keep us safe is ourselves. And the only way to do that, ultimately, is to reframe your memories and release the charge of the past so that the images they flash at us on television or in media no longer trigger us so strongly. And if we've done our work, then we're just dealing with what's in present time, and we're not always bringing up the baggage of the past, which then weakens our immune system and puts us at risk.
You mentioned earlier that there is some sort of attractor force that gets you together with, especially in relationship, with people who you have an opportunity to heal with. So the victim would attract the victimizer, and, you know, the aloof person would attract, you know, the corresponding, you know, person that would bring them more into, I guess, commitment. How do you think that system works energetically?
Well, actually, I thought some years ago when I was working with people, with particularly with the heart meridians, I call it the bat signal, that according to quantum physics, the act of perception is actually creative. It's not just passive. So as we wake up each morning and our energy field, our bodies come online, it's like a white light field. But I call it the bat signal because if you paint a black bat over a white light, Batman comes running. Or if you have an alcoholic father imprinted on your male meridian and a depressed, emotionally unavailable mother imprinted on your female meridian before the age of 5, for instance, then we have the ability to walk into a room of 500 people and fall in love with the nearest depressed or alcoholic individual in less than 5 minutes. And I get this all the time from women and men who say, do I have all alcoholic males or unavailable males tattooed on my forehead? And from HeartMath, we've learned about the HeartMath website when you're asking about cellular memory and like heart transplants. Mm-hmm. You can always check out the HeartMath website. Mm-hmm. What we know now is that what we store in the body then becomes our bat signal. So I said, I'm afraid it's worse than your forehead because we've discovered that your heart's electromagnetic fields are the strongest in your body. Mm-hmm. And they are at least 60 times stronger than your brain. I heard one lecture saying they can go as high as 5,000 times stronger than your brain. So our center of attraction, and even as having been a priest, biblically, the Bible always talked about the heart as the seat of decision-making. And if that's true, the meridians I found, both consciously and from the unconscious imprinting, are in fact regulating that principle of attraction, because what we store in the heart meridians as a positive or negative profile, those early childhood definitions of mom and dad, are exactly what we attract. I mean, Harville Hendricks, in his book Getting the Love You Want, talked about the first half of the book was the unconscious marriage, where your trauma history imprinted attracts the same trauma history in the other individual. And I give an example from my family that when my oldest sister left her marriage and I left ministry and was thinking about joining the Jesuits and getting a degree in archaeology because they became shorthanded and I wasn't going to be allowed to use my teaching degrees. And I left, but at the same time, my sister left her marriage, her alcoholic husband, and I left ministry. And at the same time, we started dating members of the same family at the same time without knowing it. In a city of 300,000 people.
Now, okay.
People would say, how could you do that? How is that even possible? And I was like, well, once you understand
the
science.
Like winning the lottery.
Exactly. Once you understand the science of the law of attraction in the heart, I'm like, oh, look at their family. It's an exact match. So if you have somebody walk by that matches your trauma profile from your childhood, that void or vacuum that was created is very powerful. And I jokingly say to my clients, it's not quite love. It's really more like two vacuum cleaners falling in love, where your void, your trauma history attracts the other person's trauma history, and the next thing you know, you're in this intense but not really compatible relationship that you discover. What I tell people is the shadow marriage, though, and relationship often is very important, because it is the one, and on the highest level, I always look at a person's decisions on four levels. On a soul level, it would take a lot of courage for a soul maybe to come into a lifetime and agree to play out the shadow part with you. It might even take more courage to do that than to have a low maintenance, easy compatibility, easy communication, instant chemistry. It's very easy to maintain a relationship like that for the most part, or at least easier. But boy, this shadow relationship, sometimes people would say, I don't know where I would be today. I wouldn't be with my wonderful husband if I had not first had the shadow marriage wake me up, make me look at that, do therapy, work on my trauma, get some healing, you know, work out my issues. And same thing with a health crisis, maybe breast cancer. I get it so often, and it woke me up. It made me change my value system, my lifestyle. It's the best thing that happened to me on this level that was very traumatic as it was occurring. And I say that's why you always look at the decisions of your life through all four lenses of willpower. And in my new book, I just presented that model, because, you know, we were all taught until the 50s, it was just saying, no, it's a willpower issue. And it's like, well, maybe trauma and relationships are more complex than that. Maybe there's a higher level, a soul purpose, and the first marriage could be positive or negative. And if we work through that and get the lesson, then we either grow together or you outgrow that relationship and you move on to another one. So, but that physics of attraction, the heart of attraction, the law of attraction, as they call it, I believe it is, as you asked, I think it's centered in the heart area, and that's ancient, even biblical text that says the heart is the seat of decision-making. I just never expected to find it to be energetically valid, and was kind of shocked as I became more energy-sensitive and empathic. I found, for instance, that if at the base of the male meridian on the right side of the heart it was ice cold, I learned to ask my clients, what happened to your father when you were little? Oh, my dad left for the war when I was 3 days old and came back when I was 3 and a half. And there was there's no grandfather, no uncle, no male nurturing. And so it's ice cold on the male meridian. So when they wake up each day, what signal are they transmitting? It's the unavailable ice cold male profile. Right. And on an unconscious level, that's exactly what they attract. One of my clients had 8 marriages before I met him. And he figured out finally, maybe it's not the women he was attracting. Maybe it was something about himself he needed to work on.
Right. Yeah.
You know, was able to do that work, identify the patterns, do the work, and then moved into a much healthier relationship.
So given that people do evolve past these traumas and past these I guess, and heal these things, do you think it's possible that at a certain level of spiritual development, you pass the point of this falling in love potential? Not that you can't be attracted to people, because you always have maybe past life, you know, memories of being with people, or, you know, or other compatibility things where you're just really compatible with them. But this idea of falling in love based on vacuum cleaners, do you think you can possibly get past that?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a stage we're all moving towards, that it's going to redefine marriage that we might have witnessed for centuries, for millennia. The marriage may have been reflecting certain deficits in our evolution and our emotional development, not knowing what a really nurturing relationship would look like, not knowing how to problem solve, not doing our own trauma work. We resigned ourselves to this kind of codependent, counterdependent, fear-based, anger-based sort of role play in marriage to try to complete ourselves. But, you know, there's no spouse on the planet that really heals your childhood. That's work that you do now internally, personally. And so I think it's not so much falling like an inequality, like falling off a ledge into something that grabs you or takes you. I think it's really a wonderful, abundant sharing of something where you have something to offer, they have something to offer, you feel the compatibility, they click, it works together, and it doesn't require all that energy and effort. It's sort of, it's so smooth, it's almost effortless in some ways. But it takes work. Relationships in our current stage of evolution are reflecting the fact that we have not necessarily talked to T-1. on. We haven't been speaking very well to the moment of trauma encoding for the last 8 million years we've been on the planet. So mm-hmm. we've been, and there's more and more studies coming out about how genetics and so on pass on trauma intergenerationally. And so we've been passing and passing and passing without resolving. So every relationship in its current state is going to have a healing element to it, an invitation to heal. But like I've seen, there as we resolve those traumas, I'm doing one of my first healing intensives for couples this year. We're going to try it for couples where they learn how to help each other recognize when you're trancing, when you're going into memory of the past and you're leaving mm-hmm. the relationship. Because if we go in and out of memory 15 to 50 times an hour and your spouse has a significant trauma history, they're not listening to you. When you start to sound like their mother, they react to you. Mm-hmm. They're gone. Right. They're in the past. They're in the 95%. So, of course, our goal is as we learn to heal those memories, we stay more in present time awareness. We're better listeners. We're better at intimacy. We're better at communication. And that's what I found, that our capacity to manifest healthy relationship increases as we reframe our memories, as we do the work in the past.
One of the sound therapists that I had interacted with in the past discovered that when people fall in love, their voice analysis has like holes in it, and then the other person's voice analysis fills in those gaps. Have you heard of that work?
That's very interesting. Not that work specifically, but I am familiar with several different approaches and theories. There is, for instance, there was an institute in London that would analyze your parents' voice, determine mm-hmm. the frequencies that were missing, would take the recording, add the missing frequencies, and have you replay that voice of your parent back in your sleep during your subconscious. And they said it was very, very healing on both conscious and subconscious levels. So it would not be surprising that as the soulmate concept is that we really do complement, support, and add something to each other.
Right.
But I've noticed that as we reframe our personal memories, your voice changes, your energy field changes. Mm. And that we add frequencies of light or love, if you want to call it that, that we didn't have before, because every trauma is a bit of a deprivation of a frequency. That's mm-hmm. where there's a whole science to that that's coming in now, where we can analyze and scan. And each nerve, we're like a seven-color projection system with these nerve centers. So trauma generally affects one or more of those nerve centers when the scene mm-hmm. freezes. So we're missing certain frequencies when that occurs. So in the work that I do, what I'm doing is saying every human being has access to white light. There's not a person I ever met who, given an opportunity, could not eventually go in and reframe their memories and put in the love and light that was missing. In fact, only you can do that. So the spouse, the partner may be able to add certain supplemental frequencies and complement and strengthen the relationship, but mm-hmm. I still firmly believe that we have within ourselves individually the capacity to reframe most of our personal, our individual memories. Now, it's all energy. So whether you use color laser, whether you use light, use sound, use vibration, mm-hmm. some do tonal healing, some do vibrational healing, it's really mm-hmm. all different nuances of the same thing, isn't it, really, as you look at it?
Yeah.
I just found that the thing you can do fastest without having to use a device is picture your own scene, reframe what colors do you see from your history, and simply move it through your body. So that the therapists that I've trained, psychologists, neurologists, physiologists, they love it because you're healing yourself. You're becoming your own medicine woman, your own medicine man. You're using your own brainwave frequencies to show your body that you're safe. And I think that's our next stage of evolution, that we really do learn to feel a health, a love for ourselves, and probably when we're in that state, we're most ready for relationship, actually.
Mm-hmm. In Body Wisdom, you've gone through the body and talked about some of the, I guess, the reasons that we develop problems with certain parts of the body. Would you like to give a few examples of that?
Oh, sure. I mean, you already brought it up earlier that you noticed from your own work, like the right side, left side of the body. Often that left brain, linear functioning comes out the right. Now, if you're left-handed, reverse what I'm saying. Right brain, feminine, emotional, intuitive comes out the left. So, of course, the Chinese have known this for 5,000 years, mapping this in the body, and we're playing catch-up. But by being able to map where memories are occurring, what I noticed after doing over 100,000 memories with clients is that certain parts of the body reflect certain issues and develop physically in correspondence to stages of our history. So, for instance, right leg is masculine support, which would reflect father issues typically. Left leg would reflect mother. Unless mother is more aggressive than dad, then you have to put her on the right and passive
right.
dad on the left. But in general, right leg is dad, left leg is mom. Now, what I started noticing was a recurrence of certain instances. So I'll go over the chronology briefly with you. So base of the foot to base of the ankle, like plantar fasciitis, 0 to 3 years old. So I talk to my clients about what happened at your birth. Were you a surprise? Would they tell you you were an accident? Were you supposed to be a boy instead of a girl? I had a client, for instance, quite this past year, who when I asked anybody had plantar fasciitis, he said, yes, I do. I said, which foot? He said, left foot. I'd say, I'd ask you, if, for instance, if I took a history about if you had any trauma 0 to 3 years old. He says, you want me to tell you what it is? I said, sure. He says, my nanny and I were kidnapped when I was 1.5 years old, and
oh,
I didn't know
goodness.
If I'd ever see my mother again. And so
wow.
he signed up for a session. I began to work with him. I could feel the pain in his foot as he talked about it, which means that it is. If I feel it, it's memory-based, at least a portion of it. I'm sort of calibrated for memory. And as he reframed it, I felt a lot of the pain leave. Now, if it's been there for more than a 7-year cycle, we can have both physical damage and emotional trauma. But when he started releasing it, a majority of it was already diminishing. So we were quite hopeful that it would heal. 3 to 5, your ankles. Had clients that broke the ankles 3 to 5 many times, and they don't have osteoporosis or osteopenia, anything of the sort. And what we found was those were the years of the divorce, where dad was drunk, mom was dysfunctional, dad was dysfunctional, and the children were lost in the shuffle. So there's no support 3 to 5, particularly when the ankles and mobility are developing. And then 5 to 10, the shins, 10 to 17, the knees. My friend Matthew was walking across the health club one day, and I said, Matthew, what'd you do to your knee? He said, I have no idea. He says, I've worked out the same way for 7 years. So then my database kicked in. I said, can I ask you a question? He said, yes. I said, it's your right knee? He said, yes. I said, have you had a conflict with your father recently? His eyes got big, and he said, how do you know I just had a fight with my dad? I said, how old are you now? He said, 28. I said, how old are you when you first fought with your dad about this? He says, one other time, I was 14. And so when we reframed that memory, the pain was diminishing. He says, you mean I triggered the trauma from the argument at 14? I said, exactly. So generally, teenage years support in your teens during the knee and athletic development, 17 to 23, top of the knee, top of the hip. And basically, that's, you know, support from mom and dad. I had a client, she was diagnosed with sciatic nerve pain in her left leg. I could feel it when I scanned her. I said, there's a trauma with your mother from probably about, it looks to me like 17 to 23. And she went to Miraval, to the guest services, signed up for a session. When I saw her the next day, she said, I signed up. She said, I'm a cognitive behavioral child psychologist, and I haven't done energy psychology. I didn't know what to make of it. She said, but when you said that, I ran and signed up. She says, because my mother married my alcoholic stepfather when I was 17. I told her that he had abused me. She accused me of getting involved in this and doing something and made my life was completely unsupportive until I left at 23. So she says, you're right. I had no maternal support 17 to 23. Hips represent transfer of power, where you take what mom and dad gave you and you become self-directive. So your hips enable you to pivot and choose your direction. So hip often reflects power transfer points. Spine represents core support from 0 at the tailbone up to present day, and even the chiropractors have a chronology about that when they talk about it. Shoulders reflect current responsibility, right side male, left side female. Right arm is male relationship, left arm female relationship. What might be interesting is like the rotator cuff generally reflects the decision to connect or disconnect, reach out, pull back. Do I stick it out? Do I divorce? Do I engage? Do I put my mother in the nursing home, left rotator cuff? Do I put her in the nursing home, but I hate to see her like this, but I miss her, but I can't stand to see her in dementia? All that decision-making dilemma goes right into that decision-making at the rotator cuff. So as I'm talking, you can kind of see how the structures of the body reflect our emotional perception and where we must, where we develop, and how the body structurally functions often reflects our emotional stress or tension. Throat self-expression, TMJ in that jaw is where we repress our feelings, right side with a male, left side with a female. Sinuses often reflect anger and sadness. It's where we hold in our tears. and we hold in our anger. So often the two common emotions I get in the sinuses, which create predisposition for sinus infections and stress, is anger and sadness in that sinus area. And the eyes are maybe our strongest imprinters, because we see, we literally store the physical pain, the emotional pain. Watching someone who's narcissistic feeling energy come from us creates a coolness outside the eyes, for instance. So there's a whole series of descriptors that involve the eyes. Shame and guilt sting like needles. Often if there is a very critical parent, I'll feel the needles over the ears, even if the parent is deceased. The memory's intact. They're still criticizing you beyond the grave, and the voice is intact. So the body-mind is amazing in its capacity to store this multi-layered, multi-dimensional kind of imprinting from stress and trauma. That's a bit of an overview, just kind of the body in general and how we store things. Hands and feet are your release points, so where we don't let ourselves let go of emotion and we restrain ourselves or hold back, that's when we store anger, sadness, tension in the hands, and we end up with arthritis, carpal tunnel sometimes. Now understand, as I'm saying this, I'm not saying that there are not other physiological sources, environmental sources, or genetic sources for illness. There are. I'm talking today about what you and I can do in terms of consciousness and healing the body.
Right, right. Well, that's fascinating. Well, would you like to give some contact information at this point, including the seminar information?
Sure, that'd be great. I train anyone to do what I do. I train parents, educators, professionals. I have everything from psychiatrists, neurologists, respiratory therapists, a lot of social workers, LPCs, MFWs. Some people do a bit of a career change. Anyone can learn to feel energy, first of all, and can do this kind of work. I think all of us as parents and educators should be able to learn these techniques so that we can do it with our friends, and kids do it on each other now to get rid of headaches and migraines. So my trainings are open to anyone that's interested, but particularly in Chicago, I do CEUs for MFWs and LPCs and licensed professional counselors, marriage and family therapists. We're working on that for Atlanta. But anyway, the trainings I'm doing a level 1-2 training, where 3 days you learn the skills and the verbal skills to resolve level 1 and 2 trauma, and that's June 13th through the 15th. And then I'm doing the talk for the Institute of Noetic Science, as you said, talk on the evening of June the 19th. And the training, the healing intensive, I'm doing a 3-day process open to the general public that is on the 20th through the 22nd, that is in Atlanta. So also, the workshops are being held at the Shiloah Center for Experiential Psychotherapy. It's 1827 Power Ferry Road. And the information is on my website. My contact person is Beverly Melland, and her phone number is 224-558-4342. Or you can go to my website, actually, and look it up. It's Healing. The name of my first book was The Healing Dimensions. So it's Healing Dimensions, DIMENSIONS.com. And it has articles and information, and when I'm doing free lectures and workshops, and we're really excited about coming to Atlanta and working with you all. I've done 2 talks for the IONS before, Institute of Noetic Science, in Chicago and here in Tucson, and it's just a great group, so I look forward to meeting them all and talking with them at your facility on the 19th.
Yeah, I think that would be great. You know, I've been a trauma surgeon for most of my career, and I do want to support your work in that way from you know, being in the profession. You know, I covered 6 emergency rooms at one point, and you know, from car accidents to stabbing, shootings, you know, beatings, you know, just I was right there seeing the initial trauma and then following them over the next however long, sometimes years, seeing the results of that trauma. And although that's physical trauma, not emotional trauma, but there's a great deal of need for this kind of work. And certainly cancer and other chronic disease does come out of trauma. And emotional trauma is, I think, one of the biggest causes of cancer that there is. I mean, we see that all the time.
Exactly.
So
and our goal is
very important work.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I appreciate all your efforts and your insight into moving out of just the traditional medicine piece into the bigger picture because, you know, you can heal the physical body, but when we leave so much emotional pain intact, it tends to weaken the immune system. It slows the healing process. We know, you know, a lot of the leading anesthesiologists are now, before you go into surgery, they're having you visualize a safe scene, or I can encourage a safe scene, and identify your favorite color from that image. And that color is unique to your computer. And then what you do then is you start visualizing, move that color 50 times through your body before you go into surgery. And as soon as you're coming to and coming out, if you start running that color through your body, it releases the side effects of anesthesia a little faster. It does it very gently, very calmly, and you come out with fewer side effects. So even the leading anesthesiologists in the country are now teaching us to use color as brainwave frequency in order to calm ourselves and establish safety.
Yeah.
So.
Well, there are a large number of people who are not afraid of the surgery, but terrified of the anesthesia. So I know
exactly.
You're
and I worked with someone this week who, what I have them do, and I would encourage any listeners that have had surgeries to say, what color do I move through my body to release the impact of anesthesia? Because we don't realize it, but, you know, anesthesia is when they kind of bring you as close to dying as they possibly can without killing you.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
the body sometimes takes that as a traumatic state and takes a picture of the anesthesia effects and holds that in the 95% subconscious protectively. So sometimes we're not still under anesthesia. We're having the traumatic side effect of the memory of the anesthesia. So when you ask what color I need to move through my body, I'd suggest you run that through your body. All of us should probably do that. I had my tonsils out when I was little, and I found years later that I was sensitive when I was discussing tonsillectomies and so on.
Right.
When I ran the color through my body, I no longer experienced that same tendency to lethargy or reaction when I talked about the memory. So, you know, the subconscious is amazing. A trauma is a self-hypnotic state, so I think we put ourselves back into that anesthesia impact sometimes when we recall surgical memory or traumatic events. And even though the anesthesiologists tell us we won't wake up during surgery, I've had a few children and adults that did and were just very traumatized, and we do have to reframe. The good news is whatever happens to you, I think we have the ability now to reframe those traumas and to release them from the body so that we really don't have to keep experiencing those things and go back through them again.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Brent. I appreciate it, and I appreciate you coming to present Noetic Science in June. Looking forward to meeting you then.
Thank you. Same here. I'm delighted and excited to spend some time with you all and to meet with you and to chat about your work and all that you do as well. So thank you again for the opportunity to talk to everyone.
Great. Well, this is Dr. Susan Kolb. We've been interviewing Brent Baum, author of Surviving Trauma School Earth. Next week, we will be interviewing Dr. Garth Nicholson, the health and anti-aging benefits of lipid replacement therapy. Then Dr. Norm Shealy will be on the 14th of June, Living Bliss, Major Discoveries Along the Holistic Path. Paul von Voorde on the 21st, Children of a Living Universe, Discovering Our Legacy Will Change Our Future. Thank you very much for joining us today. This has been Temple of Health Radio Show.